This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with Miku Su Chuang.
Guten Morgen.
Yeah, it's the start of a new day. And of course, also the start of the day before the long weekend, which I think is going to be much anticipated. It's not just a long weekend. Of course,
it's a mega weekend, isn't it? It's one of those huge annual shopping sales, like 4 days. What are you going to do with 4 days? It's a wild blue yonder, it's a horizon.
Yeah, except that if you are Muslim, have been fasting because it's a celebration for the end of the month of Ramadan. You know, it's time to kind of wish everybody around Hari Raya, Islam Hari Raya, and of course, or Eid Mubarak if you're speaking to people from the subcontinent and beyond. And also, it's time for, you know, open houses, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, there'll be an open house this year for me. I know it's waning among the younger generation that they take over from their parents.
I always remember Raya to be great because a lot of food, a lot of, you know. And, you know, Malaysia is quite unique in that sense because there's this huge period, I think starting now, when you've got this huge swing from, you know, from Raya. Then you move into Christmas and New Year's Eve and New Year's and all those parties.
Wow, you really strung together all the best bits.
No, because a lot of my friends are entrepreneurs and business people, right? And they always lament because if you're an employer and you've got staff, and, you know, I mean, Malaysia is full of public holidays. We're one of the most public holidayed countries in the world.
Yeah, thank goodness for that, because our annual leave structure is often very limited, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's
all
good
stuff.
Chinese New Year after that, so it's a continuous party.
You're skipping over months. You're just like
yeah.
Well, but that be that as it may, the news out there is some. There's good and bad news coming from around the world. As we slept, there was a bomb blast in southern Afghanistan. Some 34 people killed and over 58 wounded. But, you know, it's almost like news from Afghanistan. This is the new norm. And there'll be a time perhaps when terrorist attacks in Europe will also be of the Afghani variety, meaning people will just say...
Don't say things like that, la. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Touch wood.
Hoping, you know, for the people of Afghanistan that they move out of this horrendous thing they've been caught in for now decades. I remember as a young man at university when the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan happened, if you don't remember that so many years ago.
The late 70s or something, right?
No, it was the mid-80s. And, you know, that's an area of the world where a superpower rivalry has been going on for the last century. And, you know, if you're unlucky enough to be born in that part of the world, well, you're unlucky, unless you move up. Also in the news, you remember we talked about this, you know, Indian citizens, five young Muslim men in particular were arrested for sedition for cheering on the Pakistani team during the cricket championships.
When did politics permeate sport? It's like, you know,
since forever, I think.
Yeah, since time immemorial.
Yeah, but this is absurd. In fact, Amnesty International came out and saying this was an absurd charge.
Correct.
The police, to their credit, in their defense, said this was not about, they weren't arrested for cheering on the Pakistanis. They were arrested for jeering the Indians. Now, I don't even know if that's...
talk about splitting hairs, but I've been in that part of the world and the animosity between India and Pakistan is visceral.
Yeah.
You can always reach out and slice it.
Yeah, because of course they used to be one country before the partition,
right?
And so that's an extraordinary turn of events. So the charges have been dropped. Also in Australia, an organization calling itself SABM, which is a civic organization, has called on model Miranda Kerr to return, and I'm going to use air quotes here, 1MDB gifts.
Gifts, yeah.
Yeah, she got
lost. It's amazing that the largesse of the Malaysian public can extend as far as is hot. She's actually a Victoria's Secret, isn't she?
Is she? I have no idea.
I would like her to be.
Yeah. Well. You'll have quite a bit of time to contemplate that as we listen to Velvet Underground and Beginning to See the Light, BFM 89.9. Thank you very much.
Clap, Sharad, clap.
BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutin. That was Kusi Chuang.
You know why we're so happy? Because it's Friday.
It is.
And we've got a four-day weekend stretching out before our very eyes.
We do indeed.
Actually, have you taken leave? No, you haven't, obviously, Clark, right? No, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right?
No.
A lot of people would have.
They would have because it makes sense.
It does, right?
Yeah, so you might as well make use. 9 days, a nice 9-day stretch.
Like, 9 days is like bliss.
Speaking of bliss, when Jolo was looking for marital bliss, apparently he turned his attentions to Miranda Kerr. We just mentioned civic organization called SBAM. And Sai Anak Bangsa Malaysia.
Are you serious?
What?
See, he wanted to marry Miranda Kerr?
Well, that's why he gave her all those jewels.
You're joking.
You know, and you're absolutely right. She would only marry him for
one reason. His P&L and his balance sheet, right?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? I wouldn't speculate about the ban. I think it's not fair to cast aspersions on him. He's not here to defend himself. But we can take a quick look at Miranda Kerr. Her full name is Miranda Maker, and she was, in fact, Victoria's Secret.
I was right, Sherrod.
And she was also a representative of the Australian department store chain, David Jones. Mm. She's 34 years old. She's 5'9", and she's been married twice already. One to Evan Spiegel, and the other to Orlando.
Evan Spiegel is one of those internet guys, I think. Snapchat, actually.
Oh, right. So I think she's currently married to him. But she was married to Orlando Bloom, who is a film star.
Caribbean Pirates.
And also the Lord of the Rings Elf.
So she's got a
king.
Particular affinity to moneyed actors and internet billionaires.
Yeah, and so, you know, so this.
And then just to complete the triumvirate, you marry a Wall Street billionaire playboy from Malaysia.
Is that what it is? Did he make his money on Wall Street? Is that what you're suggesting?
Financed the Wall Street movie.
Oh, I see. Oh, is that what you mean?
$3.9 billion even Spiegel is worth. So, yeah, she likes the coin.
And the coin likes her back, I guess. But, yeah, when you look at the long list of jewels that she received from Jolo, and remember what's happened to Leonardo DiCaprio.
He's returned his Oscar, has he?
He returned not his Oscar, but the Oscar that was gifted to him. It was actually Marlon Brando's Oscar that became a gift. I also believe...
Why did he return Marlon Brando's Oscar?
Because it was a gift that was given to him by Jolo, allegedly using 1MDB money. Orlando Bloom, it's not Orlando Bloom, but Leonardo DiCaprio is sort of named in U.S. Department of Justice.
Well, he was pictured with Riza Aziz, wasn't he?
Because they were all, of course.
That's right. Yeah, and production.
Yeah, and so I believe best buddy Jolo gave many gifts to Leonardo DiCaprio, one including some artwork. And so now I think there's public pressure, or the attempts to bring public pressure Miranda Kerr. Do you think Miranda Kerr is going to release those jewels from her clutches?
Well, it depends how valuable she considers these, you know, baubles to be. If you have a bit of any moral thingy, whatever, then you might want to return them because, you know, ill-gotten gains kind of thing, Sherrod.
Yeah, it's also, I believe it's also about your concern about your public perception, right? Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of Leonardo DiCaprio stuff.
By the dirty brush of 1MDB.
Yeah, not so much 1MDB at this point in time, right? So these, again, allegations that Jolo siphoned money off from 1MDB and used it for all these purposes. And so, you know, and perhaps, you know, because we live and work within Malaysia, we should always frame it in terms of allegations yet to be proved, at least in this country. And in this country, of course, all's clear.
Justice always prevails in this country.
Absolutely.
As you know, Sherrod.
Absolutely. And so perhaps it's time to move on to the other type of justice, which comes on the streets. Yeah, street justice. And here I'm talking about the Road Transport Department's summons for anybody who beats a red light. Apparently, some 82,000 people beat red lights in the first 3 months of something called the Automated Awareness Safety System, which was introduced last year.
You don't know because you don't drive. These are what they call GATSOs in the UK. They take pictures of you as you speed past or you make illegal U-turns.
AES, isn't it?
Yes, right. And then a few weeks later, you got a love letter from the Road Transport Department.
So why do people still do it? I mean, and this is not even like a cop you can bribe, right? This is just a machine.
It's still new. Okay, so not many people are aware of it because they take pictures of you or your car surreptitiously. The second thing is because...
Doesn't Waze warn you of those things?
It does, but not everybody has an app and not everybody has a smartphone.
All right. And not everybody is smart.
Correct, with a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So,
not everybody with a smartphone is intelligent.
What motivates people to beat lights when it can be?
Enforcement or lack thereof.
What about personal responsibility? Do you think that the psychology of, you know, and it's always said about Malaysians that when they see amber, instead of slowing down, they speed up?
You know how, like, you know, if your leader or your father or your parents or whatever are ill-behaved and, you know, naughty, then surely the children and the rest of the body do as well. So, you know...
Oh, you blaming your father for this?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, if the leadership displays a certain erratic behavior, then
oh,
so
leadership
does
at home, the domestic leadership.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
You know,
no, I do
like
wonder
father,
about this.
Like sun, fruit doesn't fall from the trees.
Far,
you know,
from the tree,
thing.
Doesn't.
Far, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think there is this question of people's endless optimism. Like, you think you're going to get away?
If the
with
head
it.
Is rotten, so does the body, right? So is the body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you know, I think there's, I mean, there's a Chinese expression that the fish starts rotting from the head, right?
Correct.
That's the Chinese expression.
Correct.
I would do the Chinese, except I know that I would mangle it, and I know you wouldn't be able to correct me because you don't speak much of the Chinese.
Bananas, yes.
Yeah, bananas. Okay. Speaking of bananas, up after these messages, Stray Cats with Rock This Town, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Kusu Chuang.
Yes.
Kusu Chuang.
Somber on a Friday Friday morning.
Friday summer afternoon. Racing ahead yourself. Yeah. Have you been following the Travis Kalanick story?
Kind of. I'm a devotee, but I'm a user, a heavy user of their service. And I find it quite astounding that its CEO, you know, the chief of its of a $69 billion unicorn of unicorns can have leadership which is like kind of like so flawed. Do you know what I mean? Because the whole management team pretty much has left the company. It is a rudderless ship right now.
Right. So as I understand it very quickly is that it began with a complaint about the organizational culture and in particular sexism at Uber.
Yeah.
But it doesn't implicate him in particular. And he's not a perpetrator, as I understand it, can correct me, he's not a perpetrator himself, but he allowed for this culture to develop. And there was something about the machismo of the organization that perhaps is related to its sort of outlook in terms of business as well. And is that the best way of putting it?
I guess so. And it just depends on which prism you see it through. But for a company that has grown this size to this size in such a short amount of time, it has gotten to this size because of the way it's hustled, the way it's gone out and gotten its stuff done and aggressively built its border, its markets around the world. But it's come at a price because I've worked in American corporations like that. Everybody's hustling. Everybody's, you know, doing 15-hour days. Everybody's partying hard. And it comes at a social cost sometimes. But
okay,
it is just the American, you know, they're always hustling.
Okay, so there's a kind of frontier mentality. And I wonder,
in a way, yeah.
And I wonder if we lose something if we penalize this frontier mentality. So, okay, so this is the thing, right? You can't really say that because what you end up sounding like you're trying to justify unethical practices. Sexism is just one of the many
Correct.
Charges. In fact, they were accused. And
alcohol at parties.
Well, that's not the worst of it. Cheating drivers. I mean, they cheated
so they do
people on their wages.
They
now,
do
that
whatever
is really
Correct.
Nasty.
So Uber's come to a point, right, where it's big, it's too big, you know, whatever. And the founder has to kind of like take a step back. Kind of like when Apple got rid of Steve Jobs. You know, when he hired the board and he sold some stock in the public markets, he went for IPO. And eventually, he was sidelined because his style was just too grating for the company at that point in time. Uber's like that.
Okay, so the question is, do you lose something when you penalize?
You do, but how do you, you know,
so
in what way can you improve?
Yeah, so possible, is it possible to celebrate these great successes and presumably the kind of thinking that went behind it, to penalize them for precisely the same thing?
Well, that's one of life's biggest ironies, right? It's a bit like you when you're growing up, Sharad. You know, you come to your 23-year-old self after having, you know, behaved the way you did in university and through your teenage years. But then when you're 23, you got to change, you got to evolve, you got to keep on, you know, moving on, right? moving the car forward.
Okay, so this is one that's also interesting because there's a conversation about startups and there's a lot of...
Correct, startup culture. Yeah. You got to move on to the next stage.
That's right.
Management culture, hierarchies,
and then some people are wedded to the startup culture and they don't want to ever let it go. And
I know a company, I know some companies in Malaysia still like that.
Yeah,
I know. After 10 years of existence.
I think 8. But the point
nudge,
is...
Nudge, wink, wink, say no more.
So there you have it. It is, of course, what it is.
It is what it is.
And I think with people like Travis Kalanick, I don't think we've seen the last of him. Clearly, he's going to come back in some sort of...
No, he still owns a big... He's still the biggest individual shareholder in the business.
Yeah, but the question is, what is he going to do next now that he stepped back?
He go and sit on the beach and twiddle his toes, la.
That, never good enough for people like him, I think. Up next, JJ Kale and Friday, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Al Jarreau and Moonlighting. I'm sure it could end with me, Kusu Chuang. You remember Al Jarreau from all those years ago?
Yeah. He's now shuffled off this Mortal Coil, but that song particularly reminds me of George Benson's Breezin. Remember that one as well?
Yeah, Judgment. They were all big in the 80s, weren't they?
70s and 80s, actually.
70s and 80s. I didn't really come to...
Jazz, well, modern jazz icons.
Consciousness until the 80s, so what can I say? But
hibernating in those years,
yeah. You know, Al Jarreau was 76 when he passed away earlier this year, and it's...
Not
it's
a bad innings, 76.
Not bad at all. Yeah. You know, 50 years. Years of his career, you know, as a musician. His mother was a church organist, and his father was a minister, church minister.
Yeah.
And you know, so much of that tradition. It reminds you of how certain religious traditions, you know, create talent because their form is, you know, musical,
charismatic, and Deep South, and singing in churches.
Do you remember the Blues Brothers? If you watched that movie, that brilliant movie, and that scene at the church. I think it was not Ray Charles, but it was
one of them.
One of them, not Ray Charles. Who was it? Well, okay. Well, anyway, stretched my musical knowledge right to
which isn't extensive.
Which isn't extensive, and it was. But also, Moonlighting was the theme song.
Bruce
of
Willis and Cybill Shepherd. Remember that one?
Absolutely, that television series
that sailed. That,
you know,
that
the thing I love about talking to you, Chuang, is that you know things that I know. We're from the same place.
We're
with Tan Chung Han. Actually, you know, he'll always like, what? Huh? You know, Uriah Heep.
Then he'll
what?
Uriah.
You know, Quantum Leap, what?
If you add your age and my age, we'll get a million, I think.
Yeah, and it's, I guess, unfair to, you know, slag off our colleague while he's away to defend himself.
Yes. Why not? Of course we can slag our colleagues off.
Absolutely. It's so much fun, isn't it? Yeah,
so Gen X's. This is like what is he? Gen Y, is it?
Who knows? Gen I think. speaking of who knows what and why is the question of that tourism tax. And we'll tweet out a link to an opinion piece in the Star headline, what is the tourism tax good for?
And nothing, war.
Okay, so it sets out several things. That basically, it says government imposes taxes for two reasons.
Well, of course, income and...
shaping consumption behavior, right? So there could be a policy, social or public policy kind of dimension to taxes.
So Malaysia's got the hugest taxes on tobacco and the hugest taxes on alcohol. Have Malaysians, you know, curtailed their drinking and smoking? No.
Well, because then we have lax enforcement.
Correct.
So that's
just like running red lights earlier we were discussing, right? Because you can get away with it, right?
Yeah, you can get away with it, and because
fish being rotten from the head and to the rest of the corner.
Yeah, and so we could come back to that theme endlessly, like a loop, like a broken record. Like, but never mind. Moving on. Of course, you know, so much of this tourism tax revolves around, I think, the way in which public policy and taxation policy is formulated, right? And I think
willy-nilly, I think is the
there's this real feeling that things are not thoroughly thought through. In fact, we had that recent turnaround with the GST, right?
Yeah, and not consulting with the relevant people, because you don't talk to the tourism board, the hotel operators and the owners, and you just impose the tax. It's between $250 a night to $20 a night, which is a lot. If you're checking to a $150 hotel, you might have to pay, you know, 10-20% extra. But the thing
So it's kind of it's also misnamed, because it says tourism tax, but
it's not for tourists. I mean,
not necessarily for tourists, right? So it actually is a tax for hotel stay. That's
it's
what it is.
It's a hospitality tax.
Yeah, maybe
and
that's a
what's
it
going to do? The thing is, they've done their sums, and they reckon that if about what more than half of the 11,000 hotel rooms in the country are occupied, they might raise 654 million ringgit a year from this tourism tax. And I think that,
but will they also end up hurting the industry?
Correct. Correct. You would have to think that it's quite inelastic, right? Because a lot of these tourists, they come from Singapore and China. Would they stop coming to Malaysia if they had to pay $10 a night extra?
Probably not. Maybe not.
So yeah, that's why I think they've done
but
it.
But the thing is, there's also this whole feeling, right? When you look at the breakdown and you say, okay, there's a service charge, there's this, and then you see tourism tax, and you think, yeah. And if you're a tourist, then you'd be saying, why am I being taxed for being a tourist? I've already spending so much money in your country. So it might leave a bad taste in some people's mouth.
Or but you might, because the last couple of years we've had GST, we've had price increases, but the thing is, the ringgit now is lower than it's ever been.
So
many
we're still attractive as a destination.
Yeah. And that's why I think the government is allowing the ringgit to be weak in a way, because it allows, I mean, we've had exports. I mean, our trade numbers are fantastic. We've had double digit gains for the last 5 months in a row. Tourism has not really suffered because of the weak ringgit. So yeah.
So having weighed everything up, Chuang, you say go ahead. The tax is a good thing.
No, no taxes are ever a good thing. But if you have the,
we need no taxes are ever a good thing.
No, I says, well, what? Why would you? Right?
Because you need to run government, because you need to spend on development and infrastructure.
I'm all for government, as long as for every tax dollar that goes in, a tax dollar goes into the operation, not into some pocket, not into some wallet, not into some foreign bank account.
Right.
You know, in China, they did some sums years ago. For every $100 invested in China, 90% of that is leaked out. I wonder what that is in Malaysia.
Fascinating question then. I'm sure we'll get an answer to it some point this year. We're going to be here. There's some messages, and then we're going to be listening to Halil Chick and Trio Manja. Halil Chick, also a name from the bygone era. Lenggang Mak Lima, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Kusu Chuang. And that was Halil Chick and Trio Manja. I actually just tweeted out an image from that album, and he's there with Trio Manja, is these three women, and they're looking really sassy, all four of them,
yeah,
on that cover.
His hairstyle is a thing of wonder, isn't it?
Well, you know, I've seen pictures of you, Chuang, from your younger days, and you know what? I see a distinct similarity. Listen,
big hair, big hair, yeah.
Yeah, and it was big. Yes. Big hair was good.
Big hair was good. Big hair is great.
Yeah. So, you know, let's don't knock it. Let's not pretend we weren't there ourselves.
I was grief in the morning, though, because he had all kinds of bed hair. I just stick one side, get received with, like, radio stations on your...
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's why, you know, you drew so many people to your orbit, into your orbit. You're just wonderful that way, Chuang. But it's the eve
I'm
of
only
a
the
long,
one who
long
you, not the other way around.
I'm sorry. You're gonna take as good as you get.
Pro quo,
as you give.
Boy.
Rather.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of being, you know, the mutuality that's reciprocity.
Yeah, the reciprocity
that underlines our relationship. Amazing stuff there. Okay, conversations continue following the tragic death of T. Navin about what do we do with our young people and why and, you know, and how we can get them to stop getting into trouble. And I think this, of course, is a question that goes all the way back to the time of Socrates and ancient Greece.
It's got nothing to do with philosophy. Like.
And it's got everything to do with the fact that young people
you
will be young
Ahmad
people regardless.
Ramad have, you know, you've taken it to a different level, Sharad.
All I'm saying is, Chuang, you know, we adults perennially, since time immemorial, have angsted about or worried about young people and, you know, wrung their hands and said, what can we do to keep young people, you know, out of trouble? And of course, you know, one of the ideas, okay, so let's not knock the motivation.
Can I postulate a theory, Sharad?
Go ahead.
T. Navin's unfortunate accident actually was apparently brought about because of his LGBT persuasion, right? Right.
Because
you know, this bunch of kids didn't like the fact that, you know,
he was effeminate, I think, effeminate, or soft, or whatever
found him with another boy, and they kind of laid into him. But it's kind of like a reflection of a society.
They didn't
find
even another boy. They were buying burgers.
They were buying burgers, something, right? Okay. Yeah. But our society as a whole is becoming very much more narrow-minded than, for example, say, like in Sweden or Norway, or one of those Icelandic, Scandinavian countries. Very much more open-minded and very much more open to, you know, that belt of society. society. Whereas
you don't have to go that far. Look at Thailand. You look at Taiwan.
Look at Taiwan, right?
And look at the Vietnam. What they're doing.
So why are we so narrow minded? So you know.
But you know what is really interesting about the events, right? So to the extent that we have the facts of the events, what happened was T. Navin's friend was being bullied, and T. Navin really did man up and step in and try and stop it, and that's what got him dragged into this problem. So, if whatever his sexual orientation was, whatever it was said about his personality and, where he lay on the masculine, feminine spectrum, he did really, he didn't deserve what he got.
He didn't deserve it.
But the question now is, what do we do with young people who just not see sense? And they're clearly taking, a lead from what people out there do, their parents and political leaders. Well, all that very tragic. But to take us all the way up to 7 o'clock, we have Travis and Sing on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me Kusu Chung, and the morning run continues. Now
it's a sprint for the weekend, Sharad.
It is. It is. We've got a dash towards the weekend now. But of course, many of you are on the road, heading out to perhaps your kampong or your hometown, because I believe school children were given today off, and so
my kids are bouncing around the house as we speak.
All right.
Yeah.
And you're not packing them off to someplace.
No, because our policy is to not travel on public holidays, it's to travel on non-public holidays, because on public holiday weekends, they are ridiculous.
Yeah, this
everybody's got a car and everybody can fly now.
Yeah, and I think what's really important is people are safe on the roads and don't take unnecessary risks. I mean, it's really tragic and sad to read of news of people losing their lives or getting, mortally wounded during the festive
season.
I think the police do such a great job of trying to remind everybody about the importance of safety. They've created a system year on year. We have for this great influx. If you look at the front page of, I believe it's Utusan this morning, they give the numbers on, just the people that are traveling on various highways.
Massive.
Massive, isn't it? And so I'm just trying to call that up here. Have a look, Chuang. I know
the exodus has started, actually, isn't it? There's a lot of people driving this morning.
Look at that. Just the numbers of people on the road that will be, traveling today. Before we get to that, the real question before us is the proposal that South Korea has made that North Korea hosts some of the skiing events at next year's Winter Olympics, and the objective there to ease cross-border political tensions. But this comes in the heels of the death of that young American boy who's prank led to charges of acts of hostility against the North Korean regime, and since then, his unexplained death. We also had our personal experience of North Korea when Malaysians were, in some sense, held to ransom following the assassination of the brother of the North Korean strongman there. All that really makes you think, how could this even be possible that, one could put athletes in this kind of situation?
You know how yesterday we were talking about soft power and, the Americans and, Hollywood and, the whole .com thing. It gives America this number one ranking on a soft power survey. And then on the other end of the scale, you've got soft weaknesses, right? Because you've got people like North Korea who, when you mention North Korea, there's nothing good that can come out of it because of the nuclear testing, the Kim family, all kinds of abductions and human rights transgressions.
But they do that really great job of, those flip card things, they do these mass parades. They do that very well. I've seen North Korean kids do shows really very well.
But you'd have to imagine that in any civilized society, when North Korea comes up, it's quite the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of opinions, right?
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Would you fairly expect athletes to want to fly to North Korea?
No, I wouldn't want to, because infraction could lead to something like a charges of hostility against the state of North Korea.
Now, if you blew your nose and stuck a tissue in the wrong garbage bin,
you're very concerned about blowing your nose, because you do that in excessive form. Even here in our studios.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we're not on TV and we're radio now.
And that's the reason for that.
That is a reason for that, because you have, like I do, a face for radio. Now,
speak for yourself.
Look, we did ask. I mean, this whole idea that sporting events can help promote peace. So we spoke to Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jigadesan, who's the chairman of the Medical Committee and Anti-Doping Committee at the Olympic Council of Asia. And one of Malaysia's actually
fastest men,
you know, in his time, yeah, absolutely. And we asked him how effective the Olympics is really at creating good relations between countries.
Well, basically, the Olympic Games has always been touted as an instrument of bringing the world together. You know, the Olympics has always been seen as a forum whereby even contending nations or contending parties would put aside their differences during the days of competition. I mean, this is something that has always been sold as one of the positive aspects of this grand exercise called the Olympic Games, which comes around every 4 years and has been going on since 1896. And its fervor for hosting it as well as for competing in it has not diminished.
That was Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jigadesan from the Olympic Council of Asia.
Yeah, sports has been used as a political tool since time immemorial.
Well, he's saying just the opposite, right?
He's talking about the aspirations
of what,
and you then know. You had the 1980 Moscow Olympics.
Absolutely, I remember that. The boycott.
And then
it was
Mark Spitz, you know, famously didn't go. He would have won more Olympic gold medals, but he didn't, right?
Yeah, and also, you know, I think even recently when you look at sporting events where the Iranian players, remember the Iranian wrestler was told to drop out against an Israeli candidate. So politics
and then the Qatar
has
World
been
Cup
there.
In 2022, how many footballers will go there now because of this whole isolationism policy that its neighbours are imposing?
Oh, yeah, hopefully that gets resolved before then. But you know that sporting events, because they're really about national prestige and pride, can be used by other nations as leverage against
as
them,
leverage,
right? So there's this weird thing, because I'm a great fan of these big sporting events. In sense
and they're
of,
great spectacles.
They are. Right. And also, you know, and I can see why...
I know why you like Dr. to watch the Olympics, right?
Why?
Same like one law. It's a great spectator sport, especially
I know
athletic.
What you were going to say, and you didn't say it. But, you know... there's something about youth, young people, great bodies.
Lysome, you know.
The idea is that there you have humanity and the frailty of the human body pushed
to human spirit and, you know.
Pushed to its limits, right?
To the other side.
Chariots of fire, the music off, should be playing right now. But the important thing, of course, is that we come back to we make a distinction between the aspirations and the reality. We talk about what would be good for North Korea and South Korea and its relations, and as opposed to what would be good for athletes. And I think there's still a big question here about whether it's safe to send anybody to North Korea. In fact, there's now, I believe, the tour company that took that young American boy to North Korea is saying it's not going to take any Americans on its tours anymore, because maybe Americans, or if you come from a country that has a particular kind of profile, you might be much more vulnerable than, you know, people from the rest of the world. Though I think our experience over the assassination showed us that, you know, Malaysians can be held to ransom too if North Korea wants something. It's a country that, you know, it's the last kind of absolutist state with third generation, you know, cult of personality structured regime. I mean, it's you know, I don't think one can say anything polite about North Korea at
well,
this point in time.
Yeah, so, I mean, athletes all they want to do is compete on as big a stage as possible and win as many medals and accolades as they can. But it's what happens possibly, right? Remember the 1972 Munich Olympics, the football team there was a terror attack, and I think there's a hostage crisis with one of the airlines.
Yeah, so the Palestinian terrorists, slash nationalists, have you seen them use that opportunity to kill Israeli athletes?
Yeah.
Again, I mean, it does remind you of, you know, how vulnerable athletes are in these power games. You know, one has no idea what the personal political affiliations of those athletes were. I mean, they might come from Israel, but they might not support this.
Yeah, but they've got no political affiliations. It's just because they unfortunately come from that country where they're just a subject of
So you just become an emblem of something. Or somebody wants to make a gesture against you, they use you to promote their cause. And
so I know you're not part of the bobsled team from Malaysia. Asia, But if you were, would you go to North Korea, Sharad, to compete in the?
You know, because I'm crazy, I would. Just because, no, because I think
I think bobsled's a fantastic sport, by the way.
Yeah, because I would,
underrated.
I would. I actually have a friend who went to North Korea, and it was such an experience for him. But I must say that I would be very careful about what I did. I just would not.
And how you conducted yourself.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, this young man who died, you know, just tried to steal a sign in a hotel. I mean, really, but it was a prank, you know. And so, you know, he tried to steal one of those propaganda signs.
Yeah, but
signs.
You come to someone's country, you behave. Like, it's like, you know, those Dutch kids or those Aussie kids that go to the
market. And you don't behave. You should be wrapped over the drop your knuckles, or not end up in a coma.
That's right. It's the extent of the sentence.
We'll be back with more analysis after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.